Welcome to this edition of the Million Dollar Mastermind Podcast. This is where we pick the brains of high achievers from all walks of life and get their hard-earned, real-world insights on winning. I'm your host, Larry Wydell.
Great this afternoon to be able to talk to Alan Pipps. Hello, Alan.
Hey, how are you, Larry? Great to be here.
Where are you talking from at the moment?
I'm just outside our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., in Chevy Chase, Maryland, in a basement in Chevy Chase, Maryland.
That's all the intelligence network needs to know.
It's an undisclosed location.
Undisclosed location. We're going to have fun talking today about your adventures inside the behind the scenes with so many of my big companies, but also the government and inside that world. And so talk to me about when you started out. It's always interesting to hear, Alan, what people started out in life interested in and thinking they were going to do, and then how they work their way into what they're actually doing.
Where do you want me to start, Larry?
Let's dial it back. A lot of these things I find when it's formative, even when you're a kid, and it's good for people to hear about because everybody's got kids. And so it's good to know what's going on in their minds, which a lot of times is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. I probably wanted to be a fireman or something, or an astronaut. I mean, it wasn't anything amazing, but I guess I can start in the professional world post-college. So I say now, after seeing ChatGPT, that I was at the first revolution, which I saw in the computer lab back when we had those at college. I saw them load Mosaic, the first internet browser, to the computers there.
Oh.
Soon to be followed by Netscape. I said, this is the future, did an email for the first time, and promptly went to Washington, D.C. and got involved in politics. So I completely missed it. I knew I should have done something. I should have gone to Silicon Valley. I'd be a billionaire right now, Larry. But I went to D.C. instead, and I worked on Capitol Hill for several years.
What kind of work were you drawn to? At what stage of your life was this?
Yeah, when I just post-college, so 22, 23. Yeah. And I was pretty into policy and politics, and I thought I was going to change the world and all that kind of stuff. So came down to D.C.
You can make a difference.
Yeah, exactly. Found out that that was not the case, but yes. that was how it was marketed, yes.
Well, you probably did make some difference. Everybody, I think, I'm sure you made an impact to some degree, but even if you're, I learned this a long time ago, when you're a CEO of, and you know this, you're a CEO now, of a corporation, the bigger it is, much less a bureaucracy, whether you're the president of it, it kind of runs its own thing. And for you to get out there and you raise your hand and we're going to do this, we're going to do that, it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Good maybe. Luck.
Yeah, exactly.
Good luck on that one. Everyone applauds and lets you go back to sleep, and then exactly. They keep doing what they've been doing, you know? But how did you get interested in policy and things like that? That's a different kind of interest level, which whatever that interest was, is probably why you went to Washington rather than Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I know. I guess I was always somebody who was really interested in history. I was raised by, my father was a lawyer, but almost became a history professor. So I had that kind of in the blood. Lots of debate at the family dinner table. So I think I didn't quite know what I wanted to do when I graduated from college. So my now wife was moved down here and she had like some kind of internship. She's like, hey, there are all these legislative assistant people on Capitol Hill that I meet, and they don't seem any smarter than you. So you should go get a job there. So I did.
Yeah.
Got the job. Yeah. So, and they weren't.
It's pretty interesting how those things evolve. I'm out in Aspen today and actually got my first trip out the mountain. And in spite of being covered by face masks, helmets, and everything, I look like I've laid out in the sun for 3 hours in the equator.
I heard you guys aren't they getting like 3 feet out there? I mean, the snow sounds incredible.
You got a lot of, but it's been a week or so ago, but some more is coming this weekend. It looks like we're going to get batches of 4 inches at a time every day, which is ideal.
I would rather be there than in a undisclosed basement in Chevy Chase, Maryland. I'll tell you that much.
Well, when you got interested in politics, the policy, what about it did you felt like, I was going to tell you, I'm right next to the Mezzaluna restaurant here in town, everybody knows. And back when he was Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan came by our table and loud rested. I said something to him. Hey, Paul, blah, 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 blah. And he came in and stood there for like 20 minutes talking to us. Turns out his grandmother, he grew up coming to Aspen, and his grandmother had a place here. And when he graduated from college, he was going to be a ski bum for like 2 or 3 years. And his mother heard that, didn't even say anything to him, but she negotiated, got him a job as an intern in Washington. So he never got, she never let the ski bum phase get, he said, I went into Washington as an intern and I never left.
Yeah, that's right. So that's what we call it. In DC, we call it the vortex. Once you get a job in DC, you're stuck here forever because there are no other jobs like that in the rest of the country. And somehow you just get sucked in. So my advice to people moving here is get out in the first couple of years or else it's done. You're here forever.
When you get in, that's like people joining the military or so. That's what my dad did. He got kind of warped by that. And that was the only place for him forever. But DC, it's an interesting thing that you don't know you're getting into as a kid when you go to DC, that there is a vortex. I'm sure there is. It's real.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It can be very profitable, though. So that's a good part.
So. Right. So what was fascinating to you about that? You know, when I read your bio and you're in consulting and marketing and all of these things, it's like, what was the fascination there? Because there's got to be fascination that you don't find other ways, adventures you get to get into and electricity running because of certain projects and you get a chance to be around. And what jumped out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think for specifically working on Capitol Hill, it's really about the intellectual interest. It's certainly not for the paycheck when you're on Capitol Hill. I think my first job, I made $21,500 in like 1995 or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, it's barely survival wages. So
wow.
So yeah, it's not for the money. I think there's a lot of intellectually interesting issues. You get to learn a lot about stuff, and especially for young, you know, to be honest, I kind of downgrade the job a bit, but you learn a lot very quickly. And as a young person, you know, the whole Hill, most of the Hill and a lot of our government is run by 23-year-olds. So for a smart, young, ambitious person, you get to meet a lot of people at a different level than you would in probably most other jobs. It's not a cubicle job. There's all sorts of stuff, although you're probably in a cubicle, but it's pretty exciting. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff happening. You got to jump from issue to issue.
For those of you who are sick and tired of fooling around and are dead serious about wanting to move up fast, I've got something especially for you. I've combined the best insights from over 40 years in business and making $70 million in income and compressed them into a free webinar. That's right. It's a free resource. If you want to find out exactly what the concepts are that I use in coaching million-dollar earners, register now at WeidelOnWinning.com. You'll discover the 5-part framework used by so many to reach their financial, personal, and professional goals. You can find that link in this episode's show notes.
Yeah, it's fun.
Speak about that thing. So much of the government is run, or the world is run, by 23-year-olds. You know, you see that on, like in the Navy, on these battleships, you have these multi-billion dollar airplanes and computer systems, and then you have these 20-year-old kids in charge, and basically flying the jets, too. So how did you see that, and how quickly did you realize you could get in kind of an influential position and run some things that would be exciting?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun, like I said, and there were receptions every night, so you could eat free at like the dentist convention or whatever it was who were on Capitol Hill. Yeah, I mean, I think the reason there's a lot of young people is because it's a lot of hours. You don't get paid much. Other people aren't going to put up with that. But, you know, and it was a great thing for a few years. I worked on both the House and the Senate side. But by the end, I'd really seen the writing on the wall. It was not a place I wanted to be long term. I saw some lifers there, and it was a pretty scary picture when you looked at them. I was like, I don't want to be that guy. So it's time to move on.
What kind of options popped up to you, and which had the most appeal?
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, the normal track is to work your way into prominent committee with or leadership, member of the leadership, and then to make the jump to K Street, as I call it, and the lobbying. I had looked at that. I ended up at the end working for a senator named Max Baucus, who was taking over the finance committee in 2000. And that was certainly a prestigious role. They cover all the tax writing and do all the healthcare stuff. So yeah, that would have been the path. But really, that siren call of technologies was still there that I had rejected back at that computer lab. So I left in about 2000 to get my MBA at the University of Texas at Austin. And I wanted to leave government behind. I was done. I wanted to go out into the bright world of tech. And so, yeah, landed down in Austin and got off the hill.
Yeah. When did that lead to, in terms of business and employment?
Yeah.
Other than education, a real new adventure?
Yeah. So, I mean, I went down to Austin in 2000. And if you can do the math on a two-year MBA program, you realize that I graduated during maybe the worst tech recession in history. So Austin was pretty devastated in 2002. So there were no jobs in Austin and there were no jobs in tech. So I had a great time there. Love the school, and Austin's such a great place. But I had to crawl back to DC. The vortex sucked me back in. And my now wife had a job up here and we came back up. That time it was post 9/11, pre-Iraq war. So the administration was spending a lot of money on government consulting and contracting. So that was really the one job hiring in the country, it felt like, for MBAs. And ended up working for a small company that was doing what they called back then eGov, working on some projects that, to be honest, my main company today still was involved in. So we were helping, the federal government had a lot of, was working a lot at that point on getting interoperability for public safety communications. So it's like right post 9/11, there'd been a lot of problems with police and fire being able to talk to each other during the towers coming down, which resulted in a lot of firefighters dying because their communication systems weren't interoperable. And so I ended up working on a project to try to help that. And that's morphed over the years through different permutations into a bunch of projects that my company is still involved in.
It's interesting that your early years did not yield a bumper crop of networking contacts that would have lots of jobs, because that's what you would assume.
Yeah, it could. Well, if I had stayed, but having left and gone to Austin to get an MBA, I did consider going back to the Hill, but I was like some weird person. They were like, look at an MBA. They'd be like, what were you doing that for? Like, that makes no sense to us. So I had really like morphed a little bit so that I was no longer really a political person and they didn't understand what I was doing. But I had not yet become a full-fledged business person because I still, most of my experience had been on the Hill. So I was sort of caught between two worlds there.
Yeah. When did you first get into a situation where you were really challenged?
Oh, well, I mean, that that's all through. But my journey as an entrepreneur really started when I was working at this company, and it was a small government contracting company up here. It was bought by a much larger company. And then through that process, kind of lost the culture it had had. So it was really, for me, I started out owning businesses because I wanted a better place to work and still do the work I was doing. So a partner and I decided to strike out on our own about 17 years ago, I guess, and founded my main company, Corner Alliance, then. And it was really, wasn't some great idea. It wasn't like a hole in the market or anything like that. It was simply, I wanted to keep doing the work I did in the environment I wanted, and seemed like setting up a company was the best way to do that. So I really kind of stumbled into entrepreneurship. That was my first real challenge, was like, what do I do now that this job I had that I liked was kind of changed because of the company I was working for selling, and then kind of setting up my own thing after.
And so it seems like that was when you first started to really use the consulting and the other, you really started to use that MBA, maybe not the training, but the outlook and the fundamentals and different way of looking at things, which you wouldn't have no reference point if it just remained a policy geek or something.
Right. Yeah, well, I say actually, so I think an MBA is really great at teaching you how to be a mid-level finance person at like a Fortune 500 company. It's not real great at teaching you how to run a small business. So like I said, I started the business with a partner. We were really just government consultants who happened to own a company. But over the year, we did that. We were mostly billable, doing the work ourselves. We were really almost 1099s in a sense. But over time, we added a couple of people. We got a little more work. But it was really about 4 or 5 years in that I had to learn how to run a business. Because like I say, at that point, I didn't even know how to get into our bank account. Like we had a back office person doing all that. And I was just billable with clients all day long. But then we weren't doing projections. We weren't looking out at, we weren't doing monthly financials, nothing like that. And one day we realized, oh, we're going to start losing money because like a contract had changed and we lost some of the work on it. And we started losing money and we started going and we started putting money on the line of credit to float people and all this stuff. So that really started what I call my journey from being a consultant who happened to own a company to being a business owner who happened to own a consulting firm. And it was really through a process that it's still going on today, probably 3 to 5 years to really learn how to run a small business and how to make it successful.
How much of the consulting work is collaborative? It's something I like to do. And the first company, the culture changed or whatever. So how much of that is collaborative, done with teams? How much of it is done? You're the lone ranger running in there, working.
Yeah. So it's 100%. It's all teams. Yeah. There's very little sitting in the back office analyzing things. It's a professional services gig. It's client-based. And it's all about working with a team and having good relationships with clients. So it's not a profession for the introverted or uncommunicative.
There's a couple of things I wanted to talk about, but how did you get good at it? When you came in, how did you get good at it? Because you're not going to start. And when did you find out you really liked this work and you had to be in the process getting good? Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it was a natural ability. So yeah. I think I realized I was good at sales. And a professional services is not selling widgets or software, but I was really good at developing client relationships and figuring out what the client needed and building a relationship based on that. And then really building a team to get them what they needed. So I think for me, the process was about me figuring out what I was actually good at. And I think for a long time, I probably thought of sales when I worked on Capitol Hill as like being Willie Loman or something, peddling stuff door to door, which now I think is really cool and people should do. But at the time I would have been like, oh, I'm not going to do that. So I think going into consulting and getting into business, I realized, oh yeah, I am actually good at sales. And sales is like the most important thing to be doing.
And so sales is the most important thing of consulting.
So it's the most important thing of business, Larry. If there is no customer, there is no business.
But at some point, you've got to do the consulting, because the great mystery of consulting is, what in the world are they doing?
They're taking your watch and telling you what time it is, right? No, I mean, to be honest, like a lot of consulting, particularly in the federal government, is really just outsourced intelligence.
Yeah.
So you're really just doing the job that they can't get their own employees to do. And particularly in the federal government, you have a lot of that because there's pretty severe hiring restrictions and it's very difficult to hire people. So they usually end up, and they can't fire people, right? So if they have a program that's going to go on for 3 to 5 years, they actually don't want to hire a lot of federal employees because then they've got them for 50, right? So to be honest, a lot of it is outsourced labor.
Right.
Just pure and simple.
How did you go through the process of realizing, what was your impression of what this consulting position was going to be involving with you? And then how long did it take for you to realize what you're telling me now is mainly going to be about sales and everything? How long did that happen? How different was that from what you had a preconception?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably during business school, I learned a lot about consulting. I mean, it's one of the top three professions. So
yeah,
probably had a good idea of it. But I think when I got in, realizing that I think why I was good at it is because I could understand what the client wanted when, even though they weren't telling you in detail what they wanted, right? So it's about this, reading people, understanding how to ask some questions to clarify. And I think for me, I have a pretty good framework thinking brain. So like, I'm always listening to something to try to understand the overall framework of what you're talking about. And so I can put it in context. It's a little abstract, but for me, I need to know, oh, what's the architecture of this that we're talking about? And then I can see where your request fits in that and figure out how to help you build to that architecture. I think to me, that's what great salespeople do. They don't just ask you stupid questions. They're actually like trying to understand who you are and exactly what you're after and how that fits in with the organization you work in. Like, what does that mean when your boss, how is your boss going to act like if you buy this versus that? What's the actual, like, are you, there's a famous thing, like, are you looking for a screw or are you looking for a picture to be hung up? Right.
Yeah.
So what's the ultimate goal of what you're trying to do? I think that to me, the great salespeople are just people who know how to read someone, get the detail of what they're trying to really say, even though they can't maybe articulate it themselves.
Thanks for listening to the Million Dollar Mastermind. If you felt there were any valuable takeaways from this episode, please take a minute and leave us a 5-star review. Your feedback is important and really helps us get the word out to a wider audience. Remember, we have a valuable webinar that is absolutely free. Register for it right now at whitealumwinning.com. Thanks for listening.